Good afternoon, Safety and Wellbeing Committee. We're going to wait just another minute or so. I think we're waiting for Anchorage to get connected. Thank you. All right, again, good afternoon. This is Santa Eford, and this is the third meeting for the Safety and Wellbeing Alaska's Education Challenge meeting. As we get started, I'm going to do a roll call using our photo sheet, if everybody has that handy, if you want to follow along. James Fields. He may be a little late. Keith Hamilton?
I am here.
Hello. Ishmael Andrew? Leona Starr? Lily Hines?
Present.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
Jennifer Hall-Jones. Jennifer Hall-Jones. And Senator Giesel and Representative Tallarico, neither one are able to join us today. They have other commitments. Do we have a staff person from Senator Giesel's office? Do we have a staff person from Representative Tallarico's office? Okay. Peter Hefner, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, good afternoon. Norma Holmgard?
I'm present.
Hello. And I believe Laura Mulgrew is not able to join us, but I think Tim Parker was going to be here in her place. Tim,
that's
are you?
Correct. I'm here. Yes.
Hi,
here.
Tim. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks.
Marcy Bish. Commissioner Monaghan. Commissioner Williams. Mary McMahon.
I'm here.
Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Sarah Sledge is traveling also. She will not be with us. Maureen Hall.
I'm here.
Hi, Maureen.
Hi.
Jeff Lansing also is traveling. He will not be in attendance. Lillian Bannerman, are you with us? Of course, I'm here. Todd is not able to join us today. He's in Washington, D.C. for a conference, but but we have Paul Pressing, our Director of Student Learning, is joining us today as an assistant with me to help us.
Dana?
Yes.
This is Jeff Lansing. I am here for a short bit.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, Jeff. I forgot you said you'd join us. Well, welcome.
Anna, this is James Fields. I just got online.
Thanks, James. All right. Has anyone else joined us? Now that we've started, if I could ask everyone to mute your line so we won't have the background noise. And again, I want to welcome everyone and thank you so much for participating in this committee. We are excited to have you with us and need to hear your voices and information as we go forward today. First of all, I'm going to ask you all to go back through, and if we could start again using our photo sheet, we'll just go down starting with James. We're not going to take very long, but I do want you to give your name again and who you represent and why you're on this committee. Very quickly, we're still getting to know each other, which is kind of difficult on a teleconference. So, James, if you want to start.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, my name is James Fields. I'm the chair of the State Board of Education. So that's my role as a state board, and also I'm on a local school board in the Copper River School District. So those are who I'm representing, and my interest is obviously making the safety and well-being of every school safer in the state so the kids in Alaska can learn better and be more effective in the classroom.
Okay. I'm Lily Hinsey, and I represent a parent perspective here on this committee. I taught in the Anchorage School District prior to having children, and now I have four kids, two that will be in school this year, kindergarten and first grade, and I'm just here representing the parent perspective at this point. Have sat on the school side of it and teaching, and just want to voice a parent's concerns.
Thank you. Dr. Hamilton?
Hi. I live in Soldotna, and I serve also along with James on the Alaska State Board of Education. And my real-time life job is the president of Alaska Christian College here, which is a Native-based two-year degree-granting accredited college. And I serve also with the state authorization group that oversees colleges in our state. So I have a real desire to see the K-12 and the college piece all connect together. And that's why I serve on the state board. And by virtue of that, I've been asked to serve on safety and well-being, which I'm grateful to do. I've also been in the medical field for the last 38 years as an EMT. So it's great to be on this team with everybody. Thanks.
Thank you. Did Ishmael join us by chance? Leona Starr, did you join us? Jennifer Hall Jones? Okay, we'll skip to Peter. How about introduce yourself?
Certainly. My name is Pete Hefner. I'm president of the Alaska Association of School Boards this year. I also am a member of the local Cordova School Board. I've been on that for 12 years. I'm also on our local Cordova Family Resources Center, which is domestic violence, sexual assault, and prevention organization. I also sit on the statewide steering committee, Pathways to Prevention. I'm all about increasing student achievement, and a lot of that I feel can be done through social emotional learning as well as trauma-informed care or education, looking at the whole child approach to education and thus increasing student achievement.
Thank you. Norma?
Hi, everyone. I'm Norma Holmgard, and I'm currently serving as the superintendent for the Kashinimute School District in Chibok. I've been in Alaska. This is my 27th year now in education. and served in three rural school districts, mostly in Western Alaska. And then, of course, I spent 16 years on the Kenai, and am excited to be on this committee specifically, the only one I really wanted to be on, because I think that, oftentimes our rural communities, especially in Western and Northwestern Alaska, get missed in the bigger picture, and I wanted to make sure that we had a voice. So I'm excited for where we're going.
Thank you. Tim, I'm going to let you introduce yourself, standing in for Laura.
All right, thanks. My name is Tim Parker. I'm the president of NEA Alaska. I'm a long-term teacher from Fairbanks. I've taught high school English for the last 19 years, and I am happy to be sitting in for Laura today, who's not feeling super well. And Laura is a teacher, special education teacher from Juneau and president of the Juneau Education Association, and is an expert on trauma and trauma-informed instruction and how to work with some of our hardest to reach kids. So I'm taking some good notes and I will share them with her, and happy to be sitting in. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Did Commissioner Monaghan join us? Commissioner Williams? Mary, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, my name's Mary McMahon. I'm the principal here in the Matsu Valley at Colony Middle School. I've been here, this going on my 11th year as the principal here. I've worked all around the state in rural and urban Alaska, and I'm currently the president of the Alaska Council of School Administrators and the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals. I'm passionate about the work we do, especially when it comes to safety and well-being in our schools and creating a culture where it's one that's conducive for every student to feel confident, safe, secure, and as soon as they enter our school doors.
Thank you. Maureen?
Yes, Maureen Hall, and I'm a school nurse here in Juneau, as well as representing school nurses from all over the state. And I'm also a board of a nonprofit here in Juneau that serves people living in poverty, St. Vincent de Paul Society, including they have a homeless family shelter here in Juneau, as well as other low-income housing that they manage. So I bring that perspective, as well as that as a long-time school nurse and nurse in our community, and a mother of four.
Thank you. Jeff?
Hi, I'm Jeff Lansing. I'm currently the principal at Delta Junior High School. I'm a former teacher and counselor, and I'm in Cheyenne, Wyoming at Frontier Days visiting my family. And apparently there are different time zones and different times to call in, so I'm a couple hours ahead of everybody. But I will have to leave because I had made a commitment at 4 o'clock to be on, which is Wyoming time, so I'll be here as long as I can.
Thanks, Jeff. We appreciate you taking time out to do this. Lillian, did you join us? All right, and I think Jerry is with us. Jerry, are you there? Okay, I think Jerry is on the line, but for some reason we can't hear him. So we're going to just continue, and I think know that he's listening, and he will text us or let us know if we're on the wrong track. Again, thank you all for being here. First of all, I would like to kind of draw our attention back to where we left off after our last meeting, the May 31st meeting. And we had four categories that we had focused around with people's comments and issues. And we went through two of the categories. One was trauma-informed practices and chronic absenteeism or attendance. And we had worked through those two categories, deciding that we would share the attendance category with student learning and we did that. I have not heard, they have not had, we're having the first of the next series of meetings. So we will continue to follow up and see if they are going to take that up in any way in their committee. But we also decided it was something that we should continue and keep under our trauma-informed practices category because we felt like it was still very important to the well-being and safety of our students, or the well-being and the learning for our students. And so we're going to keep it in that category also. Second, we took the comments and issues that were under the trauma-informed practices, and we honed them down into four categories. And those four categories were professional development, or I'm sorry, four subtopics: professional development, partnerships, early learning, and restorative practices. Now what I want to do, we will circle back around again to trauma-informed practices to work on that more, but we still had two additional categories that we needed to take time and work through. So we're going to do that, but before we go there, I wanted to bring your attention to an attachment that was sent with the email this morning. And I'm going to apologize for the lateness of this. I have family visiting in town, and I have been having lots of fun with a 4, 7, and a 10-year-old running around Juneau. Last night we were gold panning, and they were very excited because they found a flake of gold. So I was over here then this morning trying to get that out. So I hope everyone had a chance to get their email. And there was an attachment entitled Facilitator Guidance for Goal and Rationale Development. And I want to take us through this because this gives us a template for where we're going to end up. Does anyone need me to forward an email to them, or did everyone have a chance to get that email? I'm going to just wait a second and see if I need to forward this to anyone.
This is Lily Hinsey, and I received one email this morning, but I'm not seeing that that attachment is part of the email.
Maybe it's, let me see if it's titled something different. It may say Jerry Covey. It may have his name
okay.
on it.
Okay, let me look.
Do you see that? Let me look at my email.
It says recommendation template, Jerry Covey, PDF.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's what it says. Thank you. I was looking at the title on the page and not what it was titled in my email. So I apologize. So it does have Jerry's name and recommendation template. Does anyone else need me to forward that information to them? Okay, so we'll just walk through this quickly. As you're looking through this, the framework for this is from the Baldrige Performance Excellence Framework. And that's what we've been using as the development for the Foundation of Alaska's Education Challenge. And this will give us guidance for the development of strategic objective goals and action plans. And what our charge is to come up with the goals that we want, 2 to 3, and we're calling those interchangeably recommendations that we're going to end up forwarding to the governor and to the legislature from our committee regarding safety and well-being. So to walk through this, the state board developed the objectives, which the committees were then formed from. And our committee, of course, was to promote safety and well-being. The goals, though, are long-term conditions or performance levels that our public education system must attain and sustain to accomplish the strategic objectives. Goals are intended to support non-incremental breakthrough improvements in areas that we are going to feel are most critical to the success of our education system. And there you can see six things that are pointed out that goals should clarify objectives, foster teamwork, encourage and support out-of-the-box thinking, provide a basis for measuring and accelerating progress. They should be clear and brief and free of education jargon. In other words, we want anyone off the street to be able to understand what we are trying to portray through our goal. Additionally, as we've talked from the very first meeting and from Commissioner Johnson's charge, these things must be, the goals must be transformative and meet those three following constraints that we've talked about. They have to be able to be applied across the system and to all of our students, not require resources beyond our direct control. I'm going to qualify this just a little bit saying, I don't think that should also hinder us, though, from coming up with a recommendation. Everything is going to take resources, but what I, in my mind, I'm looking at this as maybe our resources might need to be reallocated in some way, but we have resources at our fingertips with the foundation funding and the money that goes to education currently. The third thing, the goals must also produce measurable results that can be benchmarked against higher performing states and countries. Because our bottom line objective, remember, is to close the achievement gap for those lower students, but also without lowering our top students. We want to continue to lift all of our students in their achievement and accomplishment. So next we have a couple of examples of what the goals should look like. The first part, again, you see we're the objective, which is our committee, promote safety and well-being. Here is an example. This isn't our goal, but Jerry was kind enough to use our committee, so it's helpful to for us to get a framework around a possible goal, provide professional development on adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, to all individuals pursuing Alaska teaching and administrative certificates and all certificated educators who are employed by Alaska school districts. That would be a possible recommendation then that would go from a committee, this one, safety and well-being, to the governor, to the state board first, and the governor to be considered to move on or pass to the legislature. Along with a goal, we should provide a rationale behind that. And the rationale is what we've been talking about, the why statements. That explain the why explanation supports the goals identified by our group. The need, the justification, and the benefit of raising certain topics to the status of being identified as a goal. Again, here's an example of the rationale that would go with the goal that was just provided. Childhood trauma is far more common than previously realized. The impact of this trauma affects individuals over a lifetime and societies over generations. If children experience trauma, it undermines their ability to learn and cope, which in turn undermines their health and ability to earn a living. In Alaska, rates of child abuse and domestic violence are high. While no nationwide ACE study has ever been done, Alaska's first measured rates in 2013 were higher than an earlier five-state study by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So, again, then there's another strategic objective from Promote Safety and Well-Being, another goal and another rationale for that for you to use and look at as examples. On the third page, in some of the discussions we've talked about the how, and that would be more of an action plan. And as we've discussed in our last meeting, we really are charged with coming up with a what. That is our goal. That will be our recommendation. During that conversation, though, as we all see, it's very helpful to talk sometimes about the how and what that might look like to help us go back and make sure we are formulating the what correctly. We are not being charged with having an action plan, but we may come out and we may want to provide some options for actions that would, for consideration to the board, for them to look at another point in time after they determine which goals they would actually like to move forward to the governor. And I want to point out on the very last sentence, the final guidance, that the content and format of all of the committee's work will be subject to change by Commissioner Johnson and or the State Board of Education. Our charge is to come forward with recommendations, and the board and the commissioner will then be the final say in what moves forward to the governor. I wanted to make sure that we went over this so we've got in our mind as we continue to look at the next two categories and we work towards seeing if either of those categories are going to be transformative ideas that we want to craft a goal for, that you have in mind what our end product is. Does anyone have a question or a clarification or comment?
This is James.
James, go.
Just curious. So when we're crafting this, are we talking about a different goal for each one of our area, three area at this point, three areas? Is that kind of our end goal?
Well, I think right now we're looking at, from our last meeting, we were pretty much all unanimous around the trauma-informed practices, that we felt like that was definitely an area that we wanted to craft a goal or a recommendation. Today, our goal will be to look at the other two categories, school climate and student health, and for us to determine, or you as the committee, to determine whether those two areas likewise we have consensus on that we want to look at those as transformative ideas or goals that we want to craft a recommendation around.
Okay, thank you.
The charge to us was 2 to 3 goals or recommendations. But we might come, again, this is a committee's work. Maybe there's one. Maybe there are two recommendations under trauma-informed practices. Maybe there would be one from the trauma, one from school climate, and one from the student health. But again, I think as the group continues to work through this and look at this, that's what we're going to be working toward, to see what we feel like will be those, maybe one, maybe two, maybe three transformative recommendations. Anyone else with a comment or a question? All right, so the next during this, and I'm going to look at Paul, keep me on track. So I think we're going to have a break at 2:15. So we've got a little while to keep going here. So I want us to look at the attachment that is Category 3, School Climate. And on this handout, again, in numbered in the black are the comments that were provided from each of the committee members during our very first meeting in Anchorage. And in this category, we have, let's see, 13. So there's 13 numbered items. And then interspersed in this, Todd and I, and mainly Todd Brocious, looked through as we went through this, and there were questions from committee members about, do we already have a statute or are schools required to do certain things? And Todd added in red, under if there was any information or current Alaska statutes that related to any of the numbered comments are in red under those comments. So I'm going to give you, I think we take, let's take 5 minutes, and I'm going to let everyone kind of read through and refresh their mind on this handout, and then we'll start talking and go down each of the numbered items and see if we can find similarities of things like we did with the trauma-informed practices where we combined things or we deleted them if we felt like they really did not fit under the category or if there were an item that we did not feel like could be a transformative recommendation or goal. So let's take 5 minutes and then we'll all come back together and share some comments and conversation. Any questions? Okay, thank you. All right. I think we've had 5 minutes, which we certainly can have more time if we need it. But I do want to call, I think, Jerry now is on the call. Jerry? Well, Jerry, we still can't hear you. I don't know if you're muted or what, but anyway, we will get Jerry to say a word in a minute. I think I'm going to now start down and look at each of the numbered comments and spend some time and let get your thoughts and ideas about where we should go with each of these. So number one, leadership matters. No room for mediocrity. So goes the leadership, so goes the system, school, organization, etc. And I'm not sure before we combine things or we deleted, so let me get your thoughts. Maybe I'll start down and see who wants to start and maybe share some thoughts and ideas about this category.
I'd go ahead and speak if you want me to.
Okay.
Pete.
Yeah. Great.
I'm speaking from Cordova's point of view. We've had trouble with maintaining principles. I agree wholeheartedly, just more than you can believe, about number one there, that it is such a priority to have leadership matters, to have a principle that guides your institution and brings about, you know, and that's where it all starts, you know. It's a huge thing. And to get the professional development towards the leadership so they understand about social and emotional learning, how trauma-informed care, I think that's a huge one. Is we need the leadership to, you know, and from their leadership it can be passed down to the teachers and students. And if Mary wants to come over and join Cordova School District, that would be outstanding. Kidding.
Thank you. That's a nice compliment.
I'm sure Juno would take her to somewhere, I'm sure. well, let's think about that. Does anyone else want to talk on that matter, leadership? I'm kind of wondering if, do we think the Educator Excellence Group may be considering this, which I have not. I have not talked to them.
This is James. And looking at that number one, it to me it looks like more of a statement than a potential action or recommendation. So if we look at 1 and we look at 11, could we put wording into 11 that, because I heard him on the professional development part, which 11 hits that and articulates a plan for improving and establishing, which may go into both. So I'm wondering if we can try to combine 1 and 11.
This is Maureen in Juneau, the school nurse, and I definitely think that number 1 is very important, but I think that belongs in the educator excellent category. You know, all leaders coming in, you know, into our school districts need to understand trauma-informed practices and the impact that trauma has on our student population here in Alaska. So I think that should be embedded in any professional development and should come under the ensure excellent educators. So yes, it
now,
needs
this
to
is Jerry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, Jerry, we can hear you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have any comment or anything you'd like to share until while we're going on?
Thank you all, and I just want to let you know that I've been able to hear you all along, but due to technical difficulties on this end, I've been unable to participate. So I'm kind of up to speed on where you're at on your agenda, and I think I will listen at this point and chime in as the opportunity presents itself. Thank you.
Okay, other comments about 1 and 11. So, James, and 11 says all schools need a well-articulated plan for improving or establishing a positive and supportive school environment and then the professional development to implement it.
This is Jeff Lansing, and I agreed that I had wrote down that I thought that was more of a statement than an action plan, number one. But I thought numbers 10, 11, and 12 could perhaps be somehow into some type of goal or action plan with that.
And this is James again. I think it'd be good that, you know, coming out of the safety and well-being, you're right, educator excellence, and it may well be where it hits or where it is implemented, but I think us crafting something about the leadership and educators in general, crafting that in our committee will reinforce the other committee's decision. So.
Yeah, this is Jerry. I'd kind of like to follow up on James' comment. I believe it's important for you to get your ideas out there if they tend to be edging up to someone else's area of responsibility, so be it. I think the most important thing is for you to be able to express your ideas to the state board. When they have the opportunity to review this, all of these recommendations in their entirety, they will have the opportunity then to sort them out and to appropriately categorize them. So I would say it's better to share your ideas and assume someone else will do it on your behalf. Thank you.
How do people feel about number 4? I'm just going to bring people's attention to that. Every school should have a wellness plan, social, emotional, behavioral, and physical. Could we roll in many of the other pieces under the school climate? And I'd like to have, you know, other thoughts about that.
This is Pete here again. I think that every school should have those particular wellness plans, social, emotional, behavior, and physical. You know, doing it piecemeal, and some districts do, some districts don't. I think it would be important to get all of the districts on board with this plan.
Anna, this is Tim.
Go ahead, Tim.
Thanks. I think one of the key aspects is really getting that community and school buy-in to each of these ideas. And so I really like the idea of working with this particular one and creating a plan, because the idea of a customized plan that works for that community and is supported by that community, and that community includes, of course, the teachers, the superintendent, the principals, the students, the parents, and the community members. Very rarely does anything work when it doesn't have that buy-in. And so I would hope that the creating that buy-in is a big part of getting this plan, so that everyone's on the same page, because that's what leads to success. Thanks.
And I think, this is James, and I just follow up with Tim, what Tim said. I think, you know, you have your goal and you have your rationale, and possibly the goal is more the combination of 10, 11, and 12, and one of the rationales is 4, which gets more specific on the areas. And maybe we could add in that area the community aspect into number 4 as well, because I think we're talking about a summary or overall goal, which would be 10, 11, and 12, and the rationale for getting to number 4, which specifically lines those out. And what do people think about that?
Hi, this is Jeff. I like it.
Yeah, Jeff, I know you're going to have to probably leave us pretty soon. Do you have some other thoughts to add?
No, I just didn't hear that last bit. I heard the combination of 10, 11, and 12, and then he said something I didn't quite catch at the end there. I'd like to follow up on that.
No, I was just saying 10, 11, and 12 is more the overarching goal, And number four gets more into the specifics of what 10, 11, and 12 talk about. And Kim mentioned community, so you could bring the community aspect into number four as well. So I was just saying, how do people feel about trying to start putting a structure to it?
Yeah, that sounds like a good path. This is Jeff again. I think that sounds good. I think number three, if I can dump up there, mandate programs. I think anytime you're going to mandate a program, you're going to have some difficulty with that. Everybody has their kind of pet project. And so if you can provide a framework like you were just talking about, and then you find your program that works for your community, I think that's probably the best bet.
I think the three goes back to probably more of the how discussion that we've had before. This might be something that I'm not familiar with this program, but it might be something that a community or the school, as Tim talked about, might look at some point if we came out with as part of the how or the action that would happen, the goal or the recommendation. So I think we could probably scratch three as far as a transformative idea. Do I have any objections to that?
This is Maureen, and I think three as well as 5, 6, 10, 11, 12, and even 13 all kind of fall under the umbrella of trauma-informed practices. And so, and social-emotional learning would be a huge component of trauma-informed practices. So I'm just wondering how much of this category really kind of could mesh with trauma-informed. Thank you.
James, I would just say 11. Go ahead, Vivian.
No, go ahead, James. It's Cherry. I'll follow you.
Okay, sorry. I would agree, other than maybe 11 may be a little more broad in the way of trying to articulate a plan for improving and establishing a positive supportive school environment and professional development along with that. So I would say 11 kind of stands out as one of those goals that is an overarching, and you could put a rationale underneath that bullet point. That's my comment.
Thank you. This is Jerry, and I have a question, a clarification question, and I'm hoping that perhaps Maureen or others can help me with it. And that is to, I hear two different terminologies. I hear trauma-informed practices, and then I hear adverse childhood experiences. And I know I'm unable to distinguish between the two, and I'm wondering about the best terminology going forward for this.
So let's see, Jerry, this is Maureen, and adverse childhood experiences are sort of the reason for trauma-informed practices. We recognize that a child who has had significant level of adversity in childhood goes on to struggle in school and, you know, end up in our criminal justice system, et cetera. But by instituting practices within the school and ideally the community that recognize that children who've experienced high levels of trauma/adversity are going to struggle, and how can we best mitigate the effects once they arrive at school and help them begin to heal from some of that trauma to the best of our ability and be able to access their education. So they're all kind of one and the same.
Thank you very much for the clarification. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
This is James again. So I would agree with Maureen. You probably could take 9, 11, and 12. And I think you mentioned some other ones, but those, there are quite a few that definitely go into the trauma-informed side. But I would say 11 and number 4, definitely you could probably do something with around the school climate part.
And again, Maureen here, if you institute kind of trauma-informed practices,
you will improve the school climate. You will add to a positive climate. And I'm not quite clear how all trauma-informed falls in with wellness plans, but I think school districts are supposed to have wellness plans or wellness committees already. Not 100% sure on that.
Can Jeff or maybe Norma or Mary talk, do you have wellness plans already, or what is currently?
At Delta Greeley School District, we have a district wellness plan, but that doesn't necessarily mean an individual school wellness plan.
This is Mary. In our district, it's the same. We have a district wellness plan. Because school climate has not been part of the state assessment in the past, it hasn't been a priority in every school. However, we see a significant need to address school climate because it directly impacts academic results for kids, and we know that that's important. So we're starting to see more of an emphasis on school climate and culture in our schools just because of the needs of our students that are coming to us. However, it's not currently something that is a priority across the board. And it really, from what I've seen, depends on the leadership and the school goals. And so that's where I see room for us with this work to provide a standard to be put in place so that all schools will move in this direction of placing it as a high priority.
This is Jim.
Hi, this is...
Go ahead. Go ahead.
This is Norma. I was just going to say that our district, of course, has a wellness plan, as have all of the districts I've been in. But wellness tends to translate to food, nutrition, physical activity, not school climate, student behaviors, acceptance of each other, not bullying. Wellness and climate don't necessarily mean the same thing. And I think, at least in the schools I've been in, the educators I've interacted with, wellness means physical health and wellness, not school climate and how we interact with each other.
And this is Pete Hefner here with the policy. We also have a wellness policy, and as Norma said, it more directs towards nutrition, and that's why item 4 says social, emotional, and behavioral. Those items that need to be added to the wellness. Thus, the push for social and emotional and trauma-informed practices.
This is James. And we could take number 4 and say every school should have a school climate plan, and maybe take out the emotional side of things and say social, behavioral, and physical, at which that hits more of the culture or the climate of the school. But I think this is an easy win. We don't have to make this one difficult, I don't think. I think we're all talking the same language. It just basically needs to become up as a priority, and then schools and school districts will take it and put a plan together and actually have it as a priority.
This is Jeff Lansing. I just wanted to ask Mary, I read your attachment about what you did at your school and implemented that program. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. I don't have it in front of me. But you used your connectedness survey and decided to change some things. But then did you at the same time kind of formalize what you wanted to do as a school in terms of school climate? Thank you.
Yeah, and that's been an ongoing process. Right now we've really started to work on empowering student voice and student action. And so that's where we're at. We're developing our own plan within our school that works best for us. I'm not quite sure how to answer this best in a short amount of time, but that was our number one priority last year, is to create a culture in which every student felt they were received with love and kindness every day when they came through our doors. So from start to finish, we we had a plan in place where all the teachers treated students in a certain way, all the students were expected to behave in a certain way, and if they didn't, then we just immediately addressed it. We didn't. We said this is our number one priority, and if there's anything that is not aligned with this priority, then we're going to immediately redirect it. And so all of our efforts were in that direction, and we had some really good results, and we're still working on it because our climate connectedness survey results, we actually created our own survey for kids to fill out once a month to let us know how we're doing on reaching our goals and what we can do better to achieve them.
This is Tim. Great discussion, and I think James has us heading in the right direction with this isn't the most complicated one, but in my observation and having visited many schools this year, many districts, is that we get a couple of these pieces right, especially on the physical and the health areas, because we spent a lot of time on those, but the trauma aspect and understanding ACEs and what students are bringing with them to school still feels like it's at the front end a little bit. And it only seems like a few places in Alaska are getting that information and being able to meet students' needs as they're walking through the door on that trauma side, you know, the different things they've experienced in their lives. And of course, every school is different and every district's a little bit different. The solution will probably be a little bit different in each of the places. But I think the idea of creating a plan is the right way to go, and having some of those pieces in there that prompt a district to consider putting certain aspects into their plan is probably the best advice we can give them at this point. Thanks.
Okay, so what I'm hearing, it sounds to me like we can take the Category 3 school climate, we can develop or the recommendation, something around having a plan, calling it school climate plan or a school environment plan that we could line out some pieces that we felt would be important. I might give credit to the wrong person. Mary, I think, was talking about we really don't have a standard, but we could, through maybe looking at research or some data, come up with the pieces that we felt like should be included in each plan. And then, as James pointed out, the community, the school, the school board could then determine what would be the most important pieces for their school. And then I think many of the other pieces that we've identified do kind of fall back into the trauma-informed category that we could fit there. There are a few other pieces in here, though, that we kind of haven't talked through. And again, these were ideas presented at our first meeting, and I may the participants that brought these up may not be here, but I want to make sure that we give everyone time to talk about their thoughts. And there were a couple here that we really haven't talked about, which was more the safety climate around the school with the concern over the actual physical safety of our students in school, the concealed weapons, and the possibility of someone coming in with a gun into our school. So I wanted to see if anyone wanted to talk about that piece at all.
Santa, this is Lily Hinsey, and I had at the first meeting had suggested the concealed weapons for teachers, and I mean, not knowing the reality of that, you know, if that's realistic at all. But after that meeting, the man who was there representing the troopers that day, I forget his name, and I know he's since moved to Washington, but he had said that he thought maybe a more realistic approach would be tasers in schools. And so I just wanted to mention that. So I'm bringing it up.
Okay, I think that was Colonel Bear. Aaron's saying was there, talked about that, because Commissioner Monaghan was not able to be there at the first meeting. So what are our thoughts about that? So we also put down under number 8, you can see the incidents involving weapons in schools 2015-16 that Todd put for us. So there were 6 expulsions, 1 suspension with firearms and with deadly weapons, 1 expulsion and 75 suspensions that year in school. And then on the next page, the youth risk behavior survey, students who reported carrying a weapon on school property, 8.2% in traditional high schools and 13% in alternative high schools. And then there's another, he's got another group of statistics from the behavior survey in that next box also. Does anyone else want to share or any comments or information around this?
Well, this is James. I tend to, I'm for some type of protection, some type of defense. In the schools. But I also have to look at the recommendation.
I'm sorry, we can't hear you. There's some kind of background noise. I don't know if it's there or if somebody else was not on mute. You want to maybe start again?
Well, I may have to wait because I'm at a basketball camp and I just got a water break. So there's a lot of basketball bouncing around.
Sorry.
Pete Hefner, is I don't mean to interrupt there. Was James going to speak?
No, go ahead.
Okay. I was one of the articles, and I was trying to find which one it was. I was looking back. Was talking about social and emotional and 2 different schools' approaches, and one of them went the way of metal detectors, and the other school went with meeting the students at the front door in the more of a social and emotional learning venue. And rather than assuming students are coming in bringing guns to schools with the metal detectors and how that affects students when they walk in the door being greeted by assuming that they're carrying guns. I was trying to find that particular article, but I couldn't locate it on my phone here between the teleconference. I thought that was an excellent article. And so I'm not in favor of either item 7 or 8, guns or tasers. I think having a more proactive rather than a reactive approach to these issues is much more important. And even in seeing the data of how many students are affected by this. So I'm not in favor of either 7 or 8.
And this is James, the water breaks over, so you probably can't hear any background right now. I would say, just for recommendation's sake, and I would say 7 and 8 both are probably more, I wouldn't say that's an overarching problem in the state. It's probably more specific. Not that it isn't an issue, but I think for recommendation's sake, I think we're better off getting a good recommendation that will go across all districts and all schools. And then this type of stuff is very specific and could be brought to the board in a recommendation from a specific district or a specific group that may get through. But for this round of recommendations, I would suggest we stick to something that's, that's obvious that we've talked about. So that's my concern.
This is Keith Hamilton. We continue to only focus and prioritize on transformative kinds of things. And obviously, school safety, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, safety is paramount. And every child needs to know when they walk through that door is that they're safe. And we have to provide that. However, on the other side, our state is so diverse. There are kids who get picked up by mom and dad all the time at school in Shaktuluk that are carrying guns because they're going hunting after class. There are guns that show up on school property in Anchorage in a high school that don't belong, perhaps, in that scenario, that are, toting and carrying for a bad, maybe, reason. So it's hard in a state like ours to have a broad sweeping, metal detectors in a school of 25 kids out in Eek. This doesn't make a lot of sense either. And so I am more in the prevention mode as well, and providing us all over school climate that's a positive, and people showing up as an expectation. You don't bring guns here, but to start putting up barred windows and detectors and those things, that's just not Alaska, I don't think. But I also think it sends a message of fear. And I don't care how many bars and windows we put on or how many metal detectors perhaps might go up. As a kid is walking up to school and a kid hates him and he's been bullying him for the last year, pulls a gun, he can shoot him in the sidewalk in front of the school. So now we've got to put a barricade out on the front of the school in the parking lot before they can drive in and make sure. Then we have to do it on the buses because the kid could be toting on the bus before he comes to the school. So I'm being a little ridiculous here in the big picture, but I'm trying to make it just a point that prevention is the best route. But trying to go to all these degrees to stop it, we just cannot stop every potential caveat from happening in a school when it comes to that kind of violence. So if we do something transformative, it's got to be something different, I think, than spending a lot of money putting up detectors everywhere or enacting laws that cannot be made statewide. So that's my thought.
This is Maureen, and I agree with the previous two. I think that we have far more kids dying of suicide and drug overdose, and I agree that we should focus our energies on prevention, which, again, trauma-informed practices would certainly provide that aspect of prevention.
Okay, great discussion. Thank you all. We're at our break time right now, so we're going to take 10 minutes. But during the break, I want you to continue kind of thinking about the school climate piece, and we will try to wrap up and finalize our thoughts under this category recommendation, thinking about the plan, what that wording might look like, the other pieces that would go to the trauma-informed care, and the social-emotional learning piece that kind of, I think, are the three areas that we're discussing. So we'll get some final comments on that, and then when we come back, we'll go to the last category, student health. Any questions before we take our break? Okay, thank you. 10 minutes. That will be 2:25 around. All right, this is Santa. We're back. So again, does anyone, I think for the school climate category, I think we've pretty much gone over, I think one that we maybe did not address or talk specifically, and I think this one, number 9, which talks about the bullying through technology, or that within the school see comprehensive technology policies. And I think this was brought up by Lillian, our student on our committee, which I think is not with us today. Lillian, you did not join us, correct? So I just wanted to kind of bring our attention to that one. I think probably this could be encompassed within other plans or other areas, bullying possibility plans or the wellness plan in some way, that it could also be incorporated in that. Would anyone like to speak to this one, number 9? Maybe a principal or a teacher online, how this is handled in your school?
Well, this is Maureen, the nurse, and I think technology in schools, it's definitely something that we need to stay out in front of. I know I just returned from Wrangell, and that school district is not allowing any cell phones in the classrooms or in the school. Parents have to call the secretary if they want to get in touch with their student. They're going to try that this year. So I do agree that this is the elephant in the room for our schools, you know, how to address the use of personal devices in the classroom. I don't know if that's what the parent was meaning or what Lily was meaning, but or Lillian. But where this belongs, I sure don't know. It feels like it's a giant experiment. So,
this is Tim, and I, from a teacher perspective, we actually have a position that we've taken as a union on this, and we do believe technology does belong in the classrooms to the degree that it can be used appropriately to improve student learning. And really that choice has to be made almost on a classroom by classroom basis. There are some classes that where it would not be appropriate to have technology out, and there's others where it is very important to the student learning that's going on in there. This is a tough one because a lot of teachers will see some of these items as inhibiting student learning because they appear to be distractions. But at the same time, to say no to technology is to ignore what the world is doing. And that's not a very smart strategy in the long run. So we have to find ways to work with technology and to make it work for kids and for their actual learning needs. And it's a challenge, and it's a challenge that we need to approach by making sure that decisions are being made on a classroom-by-classroom basis as far as what's appropriate and what will enhance student learning and what can be handled. That's how we stand as a group on that one. Thanks.
And this is James.
Pete.
Go ahead, Pete.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go for it, James. Sorry.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say there's a couple different points in 9 that I think they're trying to make. One, I think, could be put into number 4 in the whole behavioral piece. That is part of I think it could be in the behavioral piece. If we move that, every school should have a climate, school climate plan. We could put that piece in there in the way of personal technology and where it's used and how it's used, and have that be part of the school's plan. The other part that they get into at the end about somebody feeling left out, well, that's a whole other dynamic that I don't know if we can touch on. But the first part, I think, could definitely be in the number 4 portion.
And this is Pete here. The idea of cell phones, it's really fascinating to watch how it's come out over the years. here in Cordova, we didn't have a data plan for a number of years until it's out now. I'm all about proactive rather than reactive stances. I don't believe cell phones are ever going to disappear. We need to rise to the occasion and accept that cell phones are part of this generation of individuals. And we need to come out and teach students how to use them effectively and properly by banning things and telling kids no. I've often found that if you tell kids no, they will automatically buck the system. They need to be incorporated and use them efficiently and in a proper manner. And like anything else, just say no to drugs. We know that program didn't work. Just banning technology from the classroom, I see it's going to be further and further usage with technology. We need to incorporate it into the system.
I agree, but I also agree that we need to recognize the impact of technology on anxiety, depression, violence, and predatory behavior. And I just heard a speaker at our National School Nurse Conference down in San Diego that presented on, he's actually writing his third book on that. So anyway, it is something that we definitely need to pay attention to, the good and the bad of technology. But where that fits in all of this, I don't know.
Correct. It's in making sure that everybody's educated in the appropriate use of technology is the biggest hurdle.
Okay, does anyone else have any other comments that they would like to share or address any of the numbered items from the school climate category?
Hello, it's Leona Starr. I'm sorry I was late. At the airport to pick up my son from Bible camp. They said 12:45 and they just told us not till 3, so I was waiting all this time. So I'm so sorry for being late.
Oh, no.
I'm on.
Thank you. We are so glad you were able to join us. We are just looking at if you were able to get your email or have the information. We were looking at the category number 3, school climate, and finishing up that discussion on all the items under that. So I don't know if you want to have anything you'd like to add to that, or if you want to wait and we can go on to the student health.
I'll just wait quick for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, we're glad you're with us.
Santa, this is Jerry. I was wondering if we could hear from Mary or Norma. They're at the ground level every day working with students and working in schools. You know, this technology issue, I think their insights might be helpful for other members of the committee to understand their perspective on this topic.
This is Mary. I'll jump in. We've embraced technology. We have a responsible use policy in place because technology is something that our kids are coming with, they're engaged with, they are knowledgeable about. However, we are also realizing that we have this population of students that would rather text than talk. And as a result, we're losing the capacity to develop human connection. And so we really have to find a balance of using technology for learning and to enhance and engage students at a higher level, but also to put it away, because some of the research now is pointing to conversations. If cell phones are just even out and on a dinner table, the conversation doesn't go as deep because the technology is there and disrupts or has the potential to disrupt the conversation. So we're creating a culture of
students that aren't thinking as deeply, that are in constant need of attention. We did this study. I was at the National Principal Conference, and this speaker spoke about the study they did where they paid college students to sit in a room for 15 minutes by themselves without anything, except for they said, if you would like, if you can't, if you get to a point where you would like to shock yourself with this shock system they put in there, then feel free to shock yourself. And everyone was like, well, why would I do that? I think they said 80% of the participants decided to shock themselves. They could not handle being alone and being quiet for that amount of time. And what we're creating is a culture of people who are not able to be alone without something to do, which creates a very lonely culture and leads to more suicide and more struggles and more depression. So this is a real big issue that we realize we need to find the balance within our school.
This is Norma, and I'll kind of jump in on where Mary went, and that is exactly right. It's a little different out here because many of our students come from very poor homes. And so their phones are actually, they buy the minutes. And so they're very careful not to be wasteful, or they're out of minutes and their phone is done. And so it is a little different. Here in our school, we have set specific times when they're allowed to have those phones out. And it's not between classes. It's before school until the bell saying time to learn happens. And it is during their 30-minute lunch. And that's it. And so we're really careful also to have those filters on our Wi-Fi. Our Wi-Fi is not open for that purpose. And so during school time, students know that their cell phones can't be seen except in those places at those times. And what we've learned is that kids are okay with that as long as there's a give, there's a compromise. But if our teachers aren't accepting of that, if all of your staff isn't on board and you're not supporting it everywhere and you're not redirecting kids and we try not to do the big punishment thing. We know that doesn't work. If everybody's not on board, then the kids are just going to congregate around the teacher that doesn't enforce it. And so that's why we're really careful about rules and things. We all have to be there. And just to also reinforce Mary's point, I have some employees who are doing some really, really important work, younger people, and if they need information from somewhere, they will send an email, and they will wait 5 days before just picking up the phone. So Mary's right. We got to figure out where the balance is, and an email isn't the answer. If you need information, you send your email, you wait a reasonable amount of time, which is not 5 days, or you just pick up the phone or walk across the street or wherever it is you need, but that is serious, and it's going to infiltrate many, many areas of society if we don't help our kids find balance and the joy in person-to-person communication.
And it's interesting, with the development of technology, where it is gone, even prying a phone out of an individual's hand. And I don't know if we can break this system of where things have gone and taking technology away from kids as well as adults. It's pretty fascinating where we've gone with technology in the last just brief period of time. And to try to turn it around. I mean, everybody texts what happened to faxes, it's just really interesting where technology has gone, and to try to stem this, it would be fascinating to see.
This is Jerry. As I listen to this, I think about safety and well-being, and I think about trauma-informed, and I wonder if this information, this issue of technology, rises to the level of ensuring that our workforce is informed, ensuring that parents and community members are informed of the impacts of technology on students, or whether it doesn't. I don't know. I agree that I like the idea of flexibility at the local level and the ability for schools to make arrangements that they believe are appropriate. But I wonder if the workforce, the teachers specifically, are aware of the impacts of technology on their students, as Mary has identified them, and if in fact there is some policy aspect or something that this committee feels is appropriate in terms of at least ensuring, going to some length to ensure that the workforce is well informed about the impacts of technology. Thank you.
Is there, I'm wondering if there's, you know, a statewide program that could be developed to educate children as well as staff about the awareness of the issues with technology and educating the students responsible use. I know in our district, before children receive their laptops, they're given a semester-long course in being responsible digital citizens and you know, including teachers into all the issues that they're being faced with, these new things that are popping out with technology.
Great conversation. We here are, we're talking about looking at seeing if maybe we could get some more research around what's happening nationally or statewide also in training or professional development available for teachers right now, or some other areas with this. So we'll try to look at some research and other information.
Excellent. And all the suicide that occurs from the bullying, you know, and that's one of our things is the bullying and the issues that develop from the technology end. Correct. Thanks.
And I would also say that the technology use is probably a huge factor in absenteeism. You know, kids that are up all night on their devices and then aren't able to come to school the next day. So I think, again, incorporating it into health classes as far as responsible use and increasing awareness of the downside of technology is great. Thank you.
Any other comments on school climate? Let me try to summarize. So what I've heard that our main point, our goal that we would possibly looking at to craft a recommendation would be around some type of plan, school climate plan. We'll look through the other pieces that will be moved over to the trauma-informed practices area. And then we need to look at some additional research or data about the use of technology in classrooms and the effect on students. Negative effect on students. And I think what Maureen said about the health piece, that kind of leads us into the student health category. Any other thoughts before we leave that? We need to move on.
This is Mary. I just want to, if anyone wants to look into some of the work that I referred to earlier, you can just Google or look up Sherry Turkle, T-U-R-K-L-E. She's got a PhD in she's a social psychologist, and all of her work is done on exactly what we talked about she says she's not anti-technology, she's pro-conversation, and she talks about the reasons why.
Great. Thanks, Mary.
And then one other thought, I wonder if the idea of responsible use of technology, you know, would be
mentioned on the modernization committee that is dealing with technology and how we can get students to responsibly use them, from, you know, stopping cyberbullying to inappropriate use, staying up all night type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. We will have a conversation with the staff person, the facilitator for that, and see. I'm not sure what direction they're going in, but we certainly can talk or share this with them also. All right, so our next category 4, student health. Again, we've got the numbered items that were submitted by each of the committee members. So there are 8 numbered items that you see there. And then the red, again, Todd has added to provide additional information about, with some of the questions that were brought forward talking about student health. So again, I'm going to give you 5 minutes, look through this, read through the numbered items, and let's see if we continue to keep student health as a transformative area that we can build a recommendation around. So again, looking at each of these to see if we have a transformative idea or thought here, or if they too are part of another category that we've already discussed. So 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I think our 5 minutes is up. Anyone want to start a conversation or talk about these 8 items on the student health list? Do we see one of these that may be a transformational? Statement or one that can be crafted to be transformational?
I was wondering about, I noticed that there is no, nothing in there about prevention, doing something more preventative on the end of, you know, substance abuse counseling and prior to people being addicted, you know, and I keep saying proactive rather than reactive all the time. But how good is our prevention in the state of Alaska in getting out and saying, oh, what heroin does to individuals? You know, rather than, you know, and rather than the quote unquote just say no to drugs issue, I'm all about prevention, of course, and the proactive response to these.
I think, yes, Jerry.
Yeah, this is Jerry. Following on Pete's comments, I think if we could hear from school leaders about what their experience is in terms of information, access to information, the impacts of prevention, and current efforts related to prevention and how successful they are on their local, at the local level, and also from school board members about that, it might give us more information to work with.
Maybe, Maureen, do you have anything about what's currently being done with prevention efforts?
Well, I think within all of our health curriculum, health standards, I think that this is being addressed, and I agree with Pete. You know, we need to know that what we're currently doing is working and using the best programs out there and evidence-based practice around that. As what belongs in this, I know sustainable food production is important, but I wonder if that doesn't belong over in the community, you know, coming more from the community. Again, incorporating that into health classes might also be an option. I'm not sure what enact a medical amnesty law has to, what that is exactly, so maybe some clarification around that. I would say 5 and 6 and 7 and maybe 8 could all kind of roll together in providing kind of wraparound services to all of our students.
Currently in the big five districts, I believe we do have a nurse in every school with the exception of Juneau, and I believe a counselor in every school as well. So thinking creatively about how we could do that with our outlying districts, you know, partnering with public health and local clinics and what have you to see that that's done, or maybe have a team going around from the Department of Ed to our outlying districts. Let's see. Another one, number three, partnering with local healthcare organizations. At our National School Nurse Conference that I just attended, someone from the National Department of Health and Social Services spoke on looking at healthcare reforms right now. One that's going to become very important in the future is payment for outcomes, not just per service, but for actually how the patient does down the road. So they said under that model of reimbursement, all of a sudden the school nurse is going to become a very key player in that, because, you know, the kid is with us several hours a day versus in the doctor's office for maybe 15 minutes every few months. So there may be funding coming down through ESSA and healthcare reforms that are being enacted to help support that service. But yeah, I think a child needs to, in order to learn, they need to be healthy, and that would include mental as well as physical health. And so I think, again, the importance of wraparound services for our most vulnerable or our kids with chronic illnesses would be an important transformative as far as trying to think about how we could provide that to all districts, not just the big five.
This is Santa. From being in my past, being in health and social services and their budget reductions, they have received major, major reductions in their public health nursing and have closed a number of their public health clinics, of course, and nurses are having to travel more. Of course, we see here we currently, there are 12 districts that have school nurses. But I know the push has been with lots of our rural communities, and not only rural, but in health and social services and generally for health services and mental health services, is looking at the telehealth possibilities. So I don't know how our districts, maybe again someone in a school, could speak to the possibility of that happening in our school districts.
This is James. And looking at this list in the way of, you know, look at the amount of funding and dollars we have, number three seems like the most, I say easiest, but the most realistic. That's what we've been, the Copper River School District, we have an actual nursing school from Crossroads Medical Center. And that's one that, you know, the department could at least encourage and work towards creating that awareness. And, you know, there's a lot of Native organizations that have health clinics that may be able to do that if encouraged to do it. And it may not cost anything to a district. So number three seems like the one we should probably maybe even dump more into, that one, preventative education, so forth. But number three seems like the logical one.
This is Mary. My comment on this is what I noticed this year and I've been in education in the state of Alaska for, this is my 20th year. This last year I was really happy about the laws that were put in place at the State Department. And normally I'm not happy about that. But I was very happy to see the required amount of minutes for physical activity, for health, being taught to all students, and for the suicide prevention training. We had significant positive results. One of the best things that we did was the suicide prevention training for youth leaders to go into classrooms High school youth leaders teamed up with middle school leaders, and they went into every classroom throughout our school and did an excellent job with the suicide prevention training. And that has always been a questionable, you know, do we talk about it? What do we do? And people are have very strong opinions about how we handle it. And we know that silence is the worst, and that's what we've resorted to over the years for far too long. So I would say we're moving in the right direction for sure because the health curriculum was one of the first things to go when cuts happened in our schools. PE, we're getting kids that are not healthy. They're not being physically active every single day. At the elementary level, they're receiving PE once or twice a week. And so now there's new movements in place where movement matters, it stimulates the brain, it impacts learning, and so I do like the direction we're going in, but I do also feel that we need to we need to keep at it, and the statistics need to be shared and be known by everyone.
Any other comments or thoughts? Does anyone currently use, do you know of any district that uses a telehealth model at all?
The which health model there? I'm sorry. And Cordova School District does partner with our mental health organization, Sound Alternatives. And they formed at the elementary school a lunch bunch and get together. Here in Cordova, we try to access as much community involvement and organizations that do work with students. So we do some of that.
Again, this is Mary. I really appreciate the comments of reaching out to the community because of the funding, the fiscal reality that we are in. We do need to work smarter, and to have a stronger community, we need to build those partnerships. So I think we're right on track with that one.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, this is Jerry. I concur with Mary, and I believe that the access to the community and partnering with the community is critical. Many of our school districts simply do not have the capability, the resources, the internal capacity to provide such services as we've discussed here. So we have to partner. And additionally, with healthcare organizations being cut back on their funding, we have a greater opportunity to partner. One of the realities I've experienced in education is that when there's a lot of resource around, everyone wants to do their own thing. When the resources dry up, we're far more willing to roll up our sleeves and work with others to accomplish things that are of useful benefit. So I think some outreach on the part of school districts would be appropriate and well received. Thank you.
And also, not meaning to talk so much here, but additionally, our Cordova Family Resources Center comes into the school at their own cost and has formed a group, BIONIC, which stands for Believe It or Not, I Care, peer mentoring group. And they have been working on some of the prevention ideas, too, about drug prevention and so on and so forth. So here in Cordova, we do reach out. I'm always somewhat afraid to tell the legislature that we have such wonderful community resources, and then they can say, well, okay, well, we don't need to fund you as highly because you've got all these community people that are stepping in. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword at times.
Hey, Jerry, this is Erin. And Juno, I've been listening in alongside Santa. I had a clarifying question, because I'm loving the discussion around partnerships with local health care organizations. However, I'm stumbling when looking at our definition of transformational change and the requirement that it not require resources beyond our direct control, I'm wondering how, and that it be systemic. Does anyone have any thoughts on how that might work when we're relying on partnerships with external organizations?
Aaron, this is Jerry. I think that's a great question to ask, and I look forward to hearing from committee members on that.
This is Lily, and just as from a parent perspective, you know, I would love the opportunity just even to volunteer. And I think if there were programs in place that were just like online type things available, maybe on the state website, education website, you know, and could maybe pass some sort of, you know, somewhat formal but informal certification to like be in a school to do some sort of program. I think there are a lot of parents that would like to be in the schools but don't know how, or maybe don't even feel welcome. So I don't think it has to be just trained professionals that are willing and able to help students.
Well, one thing that's been interesting with Senator Dunleavy's bill to propose to ban Planned Parenthood individuals from coming into schools, the effect of that was to not even allow our public health, and then the bill got rearranged. And who actually is allowed to even come into schools and talk to school children? So that's kind of interesting. Lily mentioned there too about people not being felt welcomed into the school. That needs to be changed as well. I have seen that. But we're fortunate here in Cordova to have just a multitude of organizations that are willing to come and help our students, from our Prince William Sound Science Center, the Copper River Watershed Project, the Forest Service, as I mentioned, the Cordova Family Resources Center, our Sound Alternatives Mental Health. So we're reaching out to all of these organizations, and it might be because we're a small community to be able to get these folks involved within our district. It has been a hurdle over the years to get superintendents to buy into it, and then you get the superintendent to buy in, then you have to get the principal to buy into the program, and then you have to get the teachers to buy in. And by that time, I'm 60 years old.
What's wrong with 60?
Right.
If you live to 90, you've got 30 more years ahead of you.
Right. I keep joking that I've got this flat spot in my forehead where I keep running into a wall, but I keep getting up and charging at it again. I guess I'm not smart.
Well, this is Maureen, and I agree with Aaron. You know, partnering with outside agencies is beyond our control, such as public health nurses. But is it possible to just let those that control the purse strings realize how crucial those partnerships are to the success of all of our students? And you know, they don't want Planned Parenthood in our schools, but public health nurses fulfill a vital role in testing for STDs, educating people about them. You know, that's just one small example of something that they would do. So, you know, I think, and another problem is, you know, there is a huge nursing shortage, and so, and social workers as well. And so I think helping them understand that, yes, this isn't, it's beyond our control, but it's very important that we ramp up our openings within nursing schools. I know Fairbanks has had several vacancies that they've been unable to fill, and so they're hiring licensed LPNs, you know, which is a little lower level of education with this, and they're also having to go to health assistants, not because they have to, because lack of resources, but because there's a lack of nurses. So we need to, even though it's resources beyond our control, I think it's an important message that we send, that the state does need to be proactive in addressing the shortage of many of our key professionals, such as speech-language therapists and nurses and physical therapists. You know, so the university system, it would be nice if we could respond to that need with more openings in our nursing programs. It's, you know, it's very competitive. They always have so many people apply and very few slots, and so you know, they need to respond to the shortage in order to help us meet the need that we already have and that we already have budgeted for. So,
Santa, this is Jerry. I'd like to speak a little bit to that issue of resources not require resources to be under direct control. One of the reasons that's in the transformative requirements is that it's very easy for educators or anyone involved in public systems to make the claim, we can't because, you know, we're limited by the amount of funding we get. We're always impacted by external requirements. And if we only had more money, we'd produce better results. If we had more teachers, if we had school nurses, if we all had school counselors, the list goes on and on and on. And it becomes very convenient for the education system to defend its limitations because it doesn't have the resources to do what it wants to do. Yet, the expenditures for education that we put forth in our system are truly significant. So when we say not require resources beyond our direct control, I think that's what we're trying to get at, is preventing education from having an excuse or some justifiable reason for not addressing important issues. The idea of partnering, however, even though you are using resources beyond your direct control, I don't see that as a limitation. I think the goal is for education to find a way to do what needs to be done. If that means partnerships with others that are effective and meaningful and meet the needs of your students and your system, I think those are appropriate and should be sought. Thank you.
So this is Santa. I wanted to go back and clarify because Pete asked me to. I said the word telehealth, and I'm not sure everybody understood what I was talking about. Again, from being in health and social services, they are looking or have been looking at ways to provide doctors, nurses, other medical staff in rural areas that do not have access to those. And so through video conferencing with a medical professional, that professional is able to talk to the patient and work through their medical questions and concerns over a video conference call. So I was asking if any schools, do we know of any districts or schools that are using that at this point in time? Or would that be a possibility with the technology in the schools?
Let's see, this is Maureen, and we are in a very limited way doing this with our health assistants. You know, each nurse in the Juneau School District is partnered with the health assistant to cover two schools. And they pick up the phone and call us, or they will, you know, they're constantly asking us, you know, what about this, or, you know, what should I do about this rash, or, you know, so there's this constant interplay between the nurse and the health assistant. And I'll tell you, it's really hard to assess a child when you're not there with the child. And I would be pretty reluctant to go down this road. I think it would need a great deal of training on the part of the person who is going to be accepting those calls. And it would probably, well, I don't know if it would have to be a doctor or if a nurse could do that. You know, it's very difficult to do in reality and very frustrating for all involved. I know we got our hands slapped. The health assistant had been taking pictures of things and sending them to me. Well, you know, you really need to have permission from the parent before you take a picture of a child's arm or leg or whatever. And, you know, so it's really a tricky model that, you know, to incorporate that with parental permission and consent. And, you know, it would be very difficult, I would think. It is doable, but, you know, something that I would be more interested in seeing, I know, I think it's an Aleutian Island or Aleutian district that is, they have a contract nurse that comes out a couple of times a year, and she does all the immunization, you know, looking at all the immunizations, looking at all the kids' health histories, any staff training that might need to happen at that time. And then she goes back in the spring of the year to help with the sports physicals. And so, you know, that's just one example, but, you know, and that person may be available to answer questions that staff have, but we would need some pretty strict protocols around what would be allowed and not be allowed in that type of a scenario.
So this is Keith Hamilton. I think about efficiency and best bang for your buck all the time, how to best put fewer dollars that we have for the most value. And I just want to say categorically that if you want to look at something that's transformative, having school health aides, school counselors, people that are professionally and readily available to every single school child, no matter what district that they're in, whether it's telehealth or if it's on site, for the itinerant coming through. I read the statistics of how many of our districts and how many of our schools are still lacking any kind of a regular visit support from the health side of life. I am just believing that this is our best number one way to affect change in school climate, school health, besides, of course, showing up for school, which is still my number one thing, is being there for attendance. But I just believe this is the one of the keys to us transforming our state, because every kid wins, every school wins, everybody can say this is our best bang for our buck. So I'm very, very supportive of health services being available to children. That's the only place I had to put money. That's probably where I'd want to put it.
Other thoughts or comments right now before we're getting close to our break time?
Santa, do you know what the medical amnesty law is all about?
I do not remember exactly who wrote that down or the discussion around that. I'm thinking it probably has to do with allowing or letting school personnel treat or work with a student that may have committed or maybe abusing drugs illegally or in some way maybe administer. I know the governor's opioid task force, we've been talking about having access in schools to the overdose drug, preventing overdose drugs for opioids, and maybe it had to do around that. I'm not sure.
Okay, and I just Googled it, and it does look like that's what it's around, you know. Protecting from liability those who seek medical attention as a result of illegal action. So, yeah, that must be what that is. And, yeah, that with the opioid law, I think this would be covered under that. So we can probably take that off of this one.
I think when that was brought up, if I remember correctly, it had to do with if a student reported about another student. let's say they were like drinking together and one of them, you know, was unconscious, you know, if they had the medical amnesty, that they would not be held responsible for them themselves drinking, but seeking medical attention for the person who was meeting that. So I think it was to protect students and minors was, I think, how it was presented. And I forget the young man's name, but he had just finished law school.
Oh, it was Andrew. And he's not on our committee because he moved out of state. You're right. That, I think you're correct.
Okay.
Okay, so we're about at 3:25, so we're going to take a 10-minute break and come back and wrap up. So again, let's try to come back and summarize what we'd like to focus on for the student health piece. Then we'll wrap up with, I'll give everybody, we'll go around and everyone a chance to have final comments. So 10 minutes. Thank you. All right. I think we're back, 3:35 here on my watch, on my clock. So I wanted to see if we could wrap up or summarize, if anybody wanted to summarize the student health piece. So far what I heard was the partnership, number three, seemed to be the biggest bang for the buck, and then the 5, 6, 7, 8, and I think I would put number one probably in providing wraparound services to students. Any other thoughts or comments?
I was wondering if there was any idea on the proactive approach of I just lost my train of thought there on prevention. Oh yeah, prevention there within this student health, because I don't see anything talking about prevention at all.
I think we were, I think we talked about wrapping that piece into thinking about it in this wraparound services for students, that there would be a prevention portion of that. Did I hear that correctly? I think maybe Maureen spoke about that.
Well, and I would say that, again, prevention would become under trauma-informed practices, that if you're supporting the children emotionally and paying attention to their trauma and how that's affected them, that's going to actually, they're going to be healthier as a result of that. The studies have borne that out.
And is that under student health anyplace?
Yes, it isn't. But would be incorporated into providing the more wraparound support with nursing, counseling, social workers.
I just think it's a really important piece of student health as a prevention and getting out in front of before they're addicted.
Was that on number one?
I guess when I read number one, it says substance abuse counseling for students facing addiction. That's once they're addicted. I mean, that's what I sense in the way that's worded. I want to get to the kids before they even try these drugs.
Well, and I think Mary addressed that when she talked about the law that now requires PE, health, and suicide prevention training. So that should be covered in the health curriculum discussion about prevention.
Right, and if you look under the current Alaska statute there that Todd provided, it says each district is encouraged. And if you skip down to the third, it says identification and prevention, child abuse, neglect, domestic violence, use of health services. That has some of the prevention piece there.
And that's listed on that sheet, on that particular document?
Yes, it's on the student health under number one.
Okay, I see that there now, sorry.
Where it has the curriculum, health education curriculum, and guidelines for what that should include.
Yeah, I guess encouraged isn't a strong enough word to me, and by mixing all the other things in there. Yeah, I just feel it's such an important thing that kids understand, you know, what opioids and where it leads and heroin. And, all about prevention and being proactive. rather than in encouraging. So it'd be helpful for all teachers to be able to identify individuals that are have substance issues, as well as getting the prevention out in the forefront.
And I think, Pete, I know we have addressed, we just released a new e-learning module, and it has a lot of the prevention pieces in it for teachers for training and the professional development piece on that. And also, I know the governor's opioid task force is addressing, trying to address the prevention piece in a number of ways there. Every department is represented on this task force, and there are quite a few prevention pieces being worked on.
Oh, excellent. Could you include that new course you're developing? I think it's just absolutely excellent, the trauma-informed classes that you're doing. And could you forward that one to the group or to me? That would be excellent. Thanks for doing that. Wonderful.
Yeah, we'll send that out to every... I think Todd may have sent that to the group, but we'll resend that to the committee members. And if anyone wants to actually go on and look at it and view it, we can get you a password to get onto the e-learning module to view that.
Excellent. Thank you.
Any other thoughts on student health? All right.
Anna, this is Jerry. During the break, I gave additional consideration to the question that Aaron raised about resources beyond your direct control and the transformative criteria. I think, you know, we've heard from Pete and others about extensive partnerships that they have, and some partnerships are informal, but many of them between agencies are formalized. And I think if, in fact, you do have partnerships with other organizations that can provide resources to your students, then you really do, at least for a period of time, have control over those resources. So I'd like to open up our thinking, the group's thinking about that terminology and the implications of it, and when, in fact, you might have direct control over resources that are embodied in other agencies. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jerry. I want to share a couple of things, and then I want to go around with one last round and have final comments from everyone on the committee from today's meeting. But first of all, I'd like to share that we did have one topic that was handed off to our committee from the Student Learning Committee, and thankfully we are already considering it, and it was about school climate. It was create a positive school climate that incorporates social emotional skills with academic instruction, including elders' cultural values into social-emotional teaching, trauma-informed instruction, and access to nurses, counselors, social workers, librarians, and interagency partnerships. And I think we have just discussed every one of those issues. So that was, that's, I think, a pretty big confirmation on the track that we're going. So I thank you all for that. And I want to make sure before we get close and people might have to leave us that I also bring to your attention some next steps before our next meeting. And our next meeting is August 24th, and it will be a morning meeting, so we're going back and forth, so it will be at 9 o'clock in the morning. The call-in number is the same every time, and that before that meeting, I would like to know what, if we want speakers or presentations, data, research, or other specific information on any of the categories, I would like to have that as soon as possible. Let's say a deadline by, what's 2 weeks? I guess this is a month till this meeting, so let's say, yeah, 2 weeks.
The 9th.
August 9th. So I don't know if we have, right now as we go around, maybe we can also address that if people already know or they have a suggestion for presentation or additional data. I did send an email earlier this week with all the things, the articles and information that has been posted since our last meeting on the Smartsheet site. I know we haven't been having lots of discussion there, but I hope people have been able to get in and start reading that information, and that could also maybe spur additional questions or thoughts or ideas, and maybe provide a direction for a presentation or a speaker. Another thought is, do we want to, during the next meeting, I would like to start formulating the recommendations and the rationale so that we would have an opportunity to maybe float it by another body or some others to vet those at all. So we'll kind of take the temperature of the group and see if we want to have an opportunity to do that. Any questions before we take a final round with everyone to share their final comments and thoughts?
Santa, this is Jerry. Just a thought for the group regarding speakers. You're certainly welcome to do that, and we, if that is a benefit to you. But in my conversations with other facilitators, the issue of speaker time and what they're going to be talking about has come up, and I've had the opportunity to hear from others about their priorities. And some of what I've been hearing is that if you do choose to have speakers, give them enough upfront information so they're speaking specifically to topics of high value to your group. Otherwise, if they're uncertain regarding the specific topic, you may not get what you're hoping to get from them. And the second thing that I've heard is perhaps limiting them to like a 30-minute presentation followed by a break and then 20 minutes of Q&A with your committee so that you and your group have enough time preserved following their input to adequately review and examine the ideas they shared with you. That's kind of just some guidance I've been picking up from other folks. So thank you for considering that.
Thank you, Jerry. And I want to bring one other date to your attention, and I'm sorry I forgot before I cut off there, but we are, the legislature did appropriate funding for the Alaska's Education Challenge, and so we are going to be able to hold another face-to-face kind of wrap-up meeting in Anchorage. It will be October 4th, a full day meeting again, and it will again be at the Denina Center. So you will be receiving more information about that, but I did want to get that confirmed and on people's calendars, October 4th in Anchorage. And so we have, it looks like about 15 minutes to wrap up here, so let's just have everyone any final comments, thoughts, or if you already have suggestions for a presentation or other data or information you would like to have available before the next meeting. James, we can start with you.
Okay, sorry, it took me a second to get off mute.
No, I don't have many other than the good conversation, and I think we've gotten a little closer to where we need to be. So thanks for everybody hanging out here for 3 hours, and thanks for your input.
Right. Keith.
I just want to say I think we're focusing again on those big picture transformative ideas. I'm feeling like we're closer every time, so let's keep moving it. Thank you, everybody.
Leona, would you have any final comments or questions?
Well, sorry for being late, first of all. I missed like half of it. And then I got cut off midway, so I missed another half. I had to run and go grab a different phone because my work phone went dead. So I missed a good portion of it. But from what I was listening, and I don't remember who was speaking, but I did agree with them when they were on the health one, and they were saying they don't see prevention listed. I agreed with them that I think it would be, because the red is what we talked about, right? Is that correct?
No, the black is what that everyone wrote down, and the red is actually the information that's currently in statute or required right now.
Oh, it does say it in there, somewhat. Okay, so maybe I misunderstood. But I did agree with them on that prevention should be in there. But you're right, it is somewhat in there. So
good.
That was all I had.
And I, Leona, I'll remind you and everyone that these our meetings are being recorded, so you can go back to our website under Alaska Education Challenge, and it has each meeting and the audio, so you can go back and listen if you would like to do that. And
because the first face-to-face I missed as well, so I did do that on that one.
Oh, great. So this one is being recorded, too. And I can also call, and we could have a conversation, too, sometime.
Okay. Thank you. And I'm sorry again.
Oh, no. Thank you. We're just so glad you're here. Lily?
Yeah, I just thought everyone, I was making sure I was off of mute. Sorry. Anyways, yeah, I thought it was a great conversation, great ideas. And I also really like the smart sheet. It's a good way to, you know, pass the information. I thought they're good articles, and the books listed there have been great and informative. So, yeah, I just appreciate the group and everyone speaking up, and I think it's moving forward. So thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Yeah, thanks. Pete?
Yes, I think we're moving in an excellent direction. I really appreciate the conversation everybody's having. Wonderful work. Appreciate the Department of Ed extremely for even bringing this up and developing these coursework already on trauma-informed care. And just beautiful. I think it's wonderful work. Thank you.
Yes, I'm going to put a plug in for Todd and his team, and we have lost, unfortunately, Patty Owen that was part of that group. She retired. So there are two people trying to carry the weight of the health and education piece, and so they've done an amazing job. So thank you. Norma, your comments.
I was just thinking about all the different things that have been discussed today, and it seems to me, having been in a lot of different roles in education, that listening to what Mary has done isn't so much about program. It's about Mary observing her school, being a good kid watcher, being aware and talking with her parents and her students and her staff to identify what the issues are, what the needs are, and then developing a plan to move forward on that. And I suspect that it probably didn't cost a lot of money, but I think it's really important for us to have information about what our school needs. And there won't be a one-size-fits-all. We here in Alaska know that better than anybody. And here in Chivac, we work with the Alaska Association of School Boards, who came out and did a school climate and connectedness survey last spring, and they spent a lot of time talking with kids we developed our plan for this year based on what students said bothered them about our school. And so I really think that, as we continue to talk, we need to remind ourselves that schools need information about their schools and communities, and that data is important. And a lot of people don't participate in the school climate and connectedness or the youth risk behavior because it's costly. But it's so very, very important. And we can't tell school districts what they have to spend their money on. Well, probably that's not true. We actually do sometimes. But maybe and every other year, administration of one of those tools to help schools, because each school may need a different part of what we talked about today, but they may not know. And so I hope we remember that we have to individualize, and we've got to get the data. And every school is different, except maybe not really. Many schools are alike, but we have to determine which schools are and then be able to help them with that. But I really think that data is important. So maybe we can talk about that a little bit and how schools can get the information they need to develop a healthier school climate and environment for everyone.
Thanks, Norma. We're writing that down. And I also do want to say a thank you and a plug for AASB. They have been a great partner in the Alaska's Education Challenge. They've been highlighting it in their newsletters, and they are facilitators for us, and we're just very thankful that they're a great partner with us. Tim, your comments.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for letting me sit in for Laura Mulgrew. And I'll pass along a lot of the information that you guys spoke about. I thank you also for including, you know, teachers in this discussion and educators. We care deeply about student learning, and we want the best of things to happen in our classrooms. And we know the trauma and the health and well-being of students has to come first. It's the first order of business before learning can happen. So. Good job, and we look forward to seeing what the recommendations are that come out. Thanks.
Thank you. Next, Mary.
Yeah, thank you. I keep going back to, I just appreciate all the comments that were shared, and it's really causing some deep reflection. And I go back to, what do transformative results look like, and how do we get those statewide in all of our schools and all of our districts with the vast differences that we experience within our schools. And I come back to what Norma and some of the others have said, that at the local level, it's so critical to assess the needs, listen to the students, understand the community. And I was approached by an outside program. Capturing Kids' Hearts is what our district does, and they wanted to use us as one of their showcase model schools for changing our school culture and being, you know, kind of showcasing us around the nation as one of those schools that is making a big difference with school climate and culture. And I actually, in a very respectful way, said, no, I don't want what we've done with our school culture here to be identified with a program, a business model that's for sale, because what it comes down to is we were able to harness the energy and talent of the team and work together for those transformative results that we are experiencing with kids. And it's not one program or one, you know, something that can come in and save the day. It really takes everyone rolling up their sleeves and saying, this is the work that we're going to do together. And it takes the community coming together and the parents and the students and everyone buying into this vision of, we are going to create this school climate and culture together. And it includes every single kid in the school. So I just appreciate the conversation. I appreciate us not jumping to a program, but really thinking about how can we change things. It's kind of like we don't know what we don't know, and so we only know what we know, and that's kind of scary, but we have to be able to charter and take these risks and go into unknown territory, and I appreciate us thinking on that level with this team.
Thank you, Mary. Maureen?
Yes, I appreciate everyone's comments, and especially Mary, what you just had to say about saying no to big business models that profit off of what we're trying to do here. I'm excited to see how much of what we talked about under school climate and school health all fall nicely into our category of becoming trauma-informed. And, you know, looking forward to paying attention to that critical piece of what kids bring into the building with them from the trauma that they've experienced and how we can support those kids. But in the process of doing so, we support all kids. So it's very exciting to see where this is going, and also to begin to think about how we can provide those services, you know, the extra eyes that are attuned to a kid's health, their mental and physical health. How can we make sure that every kid in the state of Alaska has access to that additional component of making sure they're able to access their education? So it's exciting to be able to start thinking about this, and I'm sure as far as presenters that you may already have some in mind yourself. So I think that would be great to hear from. I know the Alaska Association of School Boards has some people, I don't know if it's on their staff, that are already have been working pretty deeply with the whole trauma-informed piece. So if you have an expert in mind from them, that would be great. I know Seattle Public Schools has gone trauma-informed. And there we had, I think, the person in charge of behavioral health for their for the Seattle Public Schools spoke at our school nurse conference. I believe his name was David Lewis. And it was pretty cool to see how they managed to go system-wide with it. So I could forward his name, and that might be a possibility. But he spoke to us for 2 hours, so I don't quite see how we can condense that down into a 15-minute presentation. But, yeah, looking forward to moving ahead with this. Thanks, everyone.
Yes, Norma, please go ahead and forward his name and information to me and Aaron.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Jerry, do you have any final comments?
So I'd like to thank you, Santa, and all the members of your committee. It's a pleasure to listen to you. Thank you for allowing me to share some thoughts with you today. I believe you're doing great work that truly is systemic, and will serve Alaska well. I'm anxious to listen more and see what your final recommendations will be. Thank you all.
And again, from me, I also want to echo my everyone's thanks and appreciation for your time. Again, it surprises me. A teleconference is very difficult, but those 3 hours kind of go by quickly. But I appreciate your focus and your time and your work on this. And I, too, am very excited to see what we're going to end up with here. Please let me or Aaron know if you need still any help getting into Smartsheet. Or if you have questions, comments, or anything, please don't hesitate to contact us. Anybody else have a final comment? All right. Thank you so much, and we will talk again on August 24th. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.